Shout out to Adrian Adonis. Yeah. This ain't no video game. Yeah. This life will only give you 1 year. I swear, my brothers, we are locked up in a brutal scene.
Damn.
Fuck underground, I'm thunderbound. Damn. So point the arrow now. Damn. I built the pyramids and rose the sun, so call me Pharaoh now. That's just some food for thought, so take it like a protein.
Yeah.
I live in places that's so anti-black and pro-green.
Damn.
Money over Africans, but we ain't really Africans.
Again.
Divide us like we fractions, so we won't reclaim our past again.
God
so tell your fucking pastor, Robin Master, take a class again.
Yeah.
Cause I'm gonna show these people there's no need for you to ask a man. Just get up on your knees and talk to God, don't worry about your sin.
I'm telling you the truth, my word's my bond, and I can vouch for him.
This light up in the tunnel, can't you see it? You just blast it down.
I'm tired of all my people, see that's niggas with no action plan.
And I didn't choose to rap, it just fell into a bag of plans.
So let it go so he can show you how he's built a master plan.
Yeah.
I rise with the sun.
Even if you ain't the same, and treat your lady with respect, even if she hates your vein. It's easier to do the bad, I'm urging you to please refrain. Read about some righteousness or open up a business, man. If you don't really feel it, turn it off and toss it in the drain.
Cause I ain't got no feelings for no sheep who's lost without his brain.
Michael Brown, he left me with a frown, but he should've known better, man.
When they looking for a reason to put a bullet in his letter, man.
And don't you get the clue that all these people scared of all us, cause we made Rolexes and Rovers, and you can't hold us down.
We hold the crown for majors before us.
And though you play with money, we still know that you below us.
Now look what you done did. I'm so mixed, I'm just mixed up.
Cause I can see the point of every picture with these scriptures.
If you never take a handout, you can never be a victim.
So I don't participate inside these pretty little prisms.
Money,
military.
All right. Welcome. This is Dr. Will Rogers, a.k.a. Master Teacher 33. And today is Moonday, January the 26th of 2015. And the time is 12 noon Central Time. As always, we have another outstanding show scheduled for you today. And as you know, I like to get right into the meat of the message. I know your time is valuable. I respect you and I respect your time, so I do not want to waste your time. I want to spend as much time revealing, explaining, illuminating, and simplifying the word of God, the word of Yahuwah and his son, Yahushua. So today, my brother, today, my sister, we want to talk about a very important topic. Again, all of these topics are important, but today's show is very, very important for me. One of those shows that kind of touches real close to home. Today's show resonates with me. It's a show that from a book that I wrote a long time ago, and I'm in the process. I was kind of going through it, and as you know, with most of the books that I've started writing, when I was a young kid growing up, I did a lot of scribbling, a lot of writing, and I kept it. I kept all those notes. And so going back, I've been carrying, you know, there's like two or three boxes that I've been carrying around for the last, 30 years. As you guys know, in my first relationship, I moved, you know, a lot of times it was military related, but most of the times I was running from different stuff and it was financially related. But I, you know, moved 20 times in a 25-year relationship. So basically, I pretty much moved pretty much every year. There's a running joke in my family. Last night, I took my youngest daughter out. Even though her birthday is on Tuesday, we celebrated it last night. And she don't remember a lot of the stuff that me and her older daughter talks about. She talks about the fact that she went to 12 different elementary schools, I think 4 or 5 different middle schools, thankfully only one high school. And one of the reasons or one of the things that led to that, as I go back and reassess and reevaluate my life and some of the mistakes I made and some of the stuff that I learned from, one of the things that really, really stands out is poverty. Now, when you say poverty, a lot of things come to a lot of people's minds, different things, different levels, different understandings of that word poverty. Today's message, we want to talk about the language of poverty. As a young child growing up in severe poverty, I never really understood, you know, until I got older and I saw the gap and I understood the difference between, again, I talked about this class that I took by this FBI agent that changed my life when I was in, you know, when you're a law enforcement officer, you have to take continuing education classes to maintain your relevance. Two classes that stand out to me were the class on gangs. That class changed my life because I understood gangs and I knew how they, but the culture of the gang, seeing it on video, talking to ex-gang members in real life, they brought ex-gang members in there and they talked to us about the culture of a gang and what it represents, how gangs take over family and why men do certain things, and that whole gang culture really changed my life. The next class that changed my life was the class dealing with hidden codes and social norms. And that class changed my life because it brought back the memory of poverty. And one of the things that stood out in that class was the hidden code of the language of poverty. So I never knew that poverty had its own language. And so I wrote down those notes, and I carried those notes around with me, and I revisit those notes, and I've been working on that book. It'll be a little bit before that book is completed, so I won't be making that offer today. But one of the books that I'm working on is Silence, the Language of Poverty. That was a great study that was done that talks about the connection between poverty and language development and how in the home there's a social economical underpinning that establishes the mental faculties, if you will, or it decreases the vocabulary development when you're raised in poverty. Now, let me make sure that we're talking about the same thing, because a lot of people, like if you talk to my children, they will tell you that they were raised in poverty. Them knuckleheads, they can't even spell poverty. Now, they think that they were raised in poverty, but my children were never homeless. We moved a lot. We've been to different places, but, they lived very well. They had video games. They had running water. They had electricity. They had a roof over their head. We had 2 or 3 cars in the driveway. Now, some of the places that we lived at, you know, wasn't, you know, in the ghetto or wasn't in the pristine side of town, but, yeah, my children can't spell poverty. Now, they think they can, but they hear my story, and they're like, yeah, Dad, we heard it already. We know. So what does poverty mean for me? Now, my definition of poverty is like the way I grew up. And we didn't have no running water. We didn't have indoor plumbing. We used candles. Now, this was before my mom died. My life got a little better when I left my mom and I went to move with my dad, lived in this little town right outside of Houston, Texas, called Richmond. And so when I moved to Richmond, man, I arrived. I mean, I was like, man, I went from a town of 400 people to a town of like, what, 5,000 people? So I was in a big city. At least that's what I thought. And so the whole time I was poor, I really didn't know I was poor because everybody was poor. And so actually my life was pretty good. Even though we used candles and kerosene lamps, I thought everybody else did too. Even though we didn't have an indoor bathroom, we had to go to the outhouse. I don't know if you guys ever been to the country and went out and used the outhouse at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's kind of dark and smelly out there, a little spooky. If you're a little scary little kid like I was, yeah, the outhouse is not a good place to go at night. So you make sure you go to the restroom while the sun was up, because you don't want to go to the outhouse. It was a little scary out there. And I remember my mom used to cook, and she had a wood-burning stove. Y'all remember those days? Now, I'm not talking about the 30s or the 40s. I'm old, but I'm not that old. I'm talking about, like, the 70s and 80s. People tell me, well, brother, they had, you know, they had electricity, and they had running water and plumbing. Yeah, they did. We just didn't have it. So my mom had 13 children, actually, 9 of which, quote-unquote, lived in a three-room house. Not three bedrooms, three rooms. Let me make sure you understand what poverty is. So we had a living room, we had a kitchen, and we had a bedroom. Not three bedrooms, three rooms. That was a house. 9 children in there. I don't know if y'all really understand poverty, man. So that's what I grew up, that's where I came from. So when I say poverty, the language of poverty is silence, what do I mean? Well, that was this great study, and I posted it, a little of that information in today's intro. Children whose families are on welfare, based on this study, hear about 600 words per hour. The working class child hears about 1,200 words per hour, about double. But a child who comes from a professional background, where mother and fathers have, quote-unquote, professional careers, which for me means a job, both parents are working, or the father has a professional career that's able to provide for the family, then in that environment, wow, the children hear 2,100 words per hour. So notice the gap. Notice the difference between the amount of words that are heard in a poor family versus the amount of words that are heard in a rich or a professional family. So we got 2,100 words, and we got 600 words. So as you can see, my brothers and sisters, that's quite a difference. That's quite a word gap, if you will. So when we look at that word gap, we see that's about 1,500 words more that a child hears per hour. According to the study, by the age of 3, a poor child would have heard 30 million words less than a child from a professional home. Now, for me, this is a little bit of race because, again, primarily where I grew up, the people that was poor was black, and the people that was professional was white. That was just in my, again, I'm from deep, deep, deep south, where, you know, the Caucasians address black folks as boy. So as a young man growing up, I thought my name was boy. I heard it so much. My own father come up today. To this day, I go home and see my dad. He said, hey, what's up, boy? I didn't wonder if he knows my name. That's poverty. Poverty, brothers and sisters, the language of poverty is silence, lack of communication. And so when I talk to young African-American men, and I do this, and I talk to previously incarcerated individuals who are primarily African-American, or like when I was in the military, you know, the military is made of most of the people that I met in the military that was Caucasians was from like Kentucky, Tennessee, Idaho, Montana. They was usually what we call the poor white folks. And so the military was a viable option. But we all had the same problem, whether we was black or white, or like they taught us in the Marines, whether you was a dark green Marine or a light green Marine. In the Marine Corps, there was no race. And they didn't care if you was either dark green or light green. And so once we understand that there was, and I've done many shows on the technological gap. I've done many shows on the wealth gap. I've done many shows on the intellectual gap. But I've never done a show on the communication gap, the verbal gap. So today we're talking about the verbal gap that exists because of poverty. Now, there are some clinical neurological studies that talks about poverty and language development. Now, this is scientifically proven. There's tons and tons of studies that I have inside of my book, Silence, the Language of Poverty. So when you meet a young African-American male and he goes to this job or he takes a test, you know the first time I took the police exam, Yeah, it was like taking the ASVAB to get into the military. None of those words I could pronounce, or I didn't know the definition of them. So I was at a huge disadvantage. But you know what was interesting is the difference between me and my brother, who was a year and a half older than me. Now, my brother almost aced the ASVAB. My score was so low, they told me that I only had, like, basically one option. That was infantry. And the only way I got into the Marine Corps, I refused to go to infantry. Because I was born at night. I just wasn't born last night. So I knew if you go to infantry, that basically meant, you know, you got a rifle and you out on the front lines. And that was pretty much mean that you were signing your death certificate. So I said I was either going to military police or I was going to go into legal. And they said, well, you got to retest the ASVAB. So I did. With the help of my brother, I scored high enough to go into another field. Because they sent all of the quote-unquote dummies, you didn't hear that from me, in the infantry. In the Marine Corps, we used to call them bush masters. Because you couldn't master the language, so you go out and you master bushes or you master trees. Now, those guys are deadly because, again, they may not be able to speak very articulately, but they are very well trained in hand-to-hand combat, or what we call CBQ. And so one of the things I learned was, when I was a young Marine, is that people who were affluent, they had a command of the English language or their natural language. So I sought out to do, again, when I was in the Marines, they said that blacks could not, we couldn't swim, we could not shoot, and we could not read a compass. So by the time I graduated boot camp, I was an expert marksman, I was WSSI, Water Safety Survival Instructor, and I was expert in what we call urban warfare, which basically means you can drop me off in the middle of a desert. You can drop me off anywhere. As long as I can see the sky, I can find my way home. Why? Because they said I couldn't do it. The next thing they said, that people who lived in poverty had a low socioeconomical status. Now, this is called the SES. Inside of my book, I talk about SES all the time. Because SES means social economic status. Now, based upon this study, the long-term effects of poverty on your SES, your economic status, basically how much money you make. Based upon this study, the long-term effects of the social economic status, the SES, within a predominantly African-American culture or poor culture is like 10 times or 10 to 1. Meaning, when you understand the mechanics of how poverty affects the brain through the lack of hearing language, it's almost as if a poor person is born deaf or deaf because they hear 30 million words less by the time that they're 3. What happens by the time that they're 6? 30 million plus 30 million, 60 million. And you can do the math. So the Language Development Center of someone who comes from a poor background, from someone who lives in poverty. Now, the study was based upon anybody that lived that was on welfare. Now, I would like to go a little deeper because everybody that I know, like I can go home to Richmond right now. I go home a lot. And a lot of my buddies, people have done fairly well, but there's a lot of my friends, they still walk around, they still holding that same brown bag, stand on the same corner. When I left, when I was in high school, they still there. They're just older. Or they in prison, or they dead. Why? They did not have the ability to increase their verbal skills, their communication skills. So one of the things that I did was I set out to increase my vocabulary. Now, I need to tell you, I need to explain how I did that here in just a moment because this is very, very important for you or someone that you know. Because if you are, and me, I'm called to the underdog. So I do this every day, all day. So as you know, in my last professional job, I worked for the BOP, Bureau of Prisons. I was a case manager or what they call a reintegration specialist. As a reintegration specialist, my job was to assist a previously incarcerated individual with being reintegrated back into society. You ever met a man who's been in prison for 30 years and he come out and he never seen a cell phone? He never rode a public transit? He never rode a bus? He don't even know what Wi-Fi is. He don't know how to work a VCR. I mean, I don't know. I remember this one gentleman. I'll never forget him because, again, he was Caucasian. He had metal screws and stuff, man. I mean, wow. He came. When I went to his parents' home, I couldn't believe it. Now, in San Antonio, there's this name. You can go to Google and type in Elm Creek in San Antonio, Texas, and just look at the homes in Elm Creek. This gentleman was from Elm Creek. 10, 15, 20,000 square feet home. What in the world was he doing in prison? And then he told me his life story. And I just didn't, I couldn't believe it. And you're talking about a man that just made a mistake. And that one mistake cost him his life because he spent almost 30 years in prison. And though it was a white-collar crime, money laundering, and this kind of stuff, just got caught up in business, making big money, millions of dollars, and they needed a fall guy, and he was it. And so I'm not talking about these type of individuals, because he has to make an adjustment because he's been outside of time. But the majority of previously incarcerated individuals were just like me. They lack communication skills. They don't have the ability to communicate in the business world. And so you wonder why you're a businessman and you're having problems. Now, when I ran my own insurance agency, you know, I went through, I think it was 15 agents in 6 months. Nobody wanted to work. And they couldn't work. They couldn't, number one, they couldn't pass the insurance exam. Number two, if they did pass the insurance exam, they didn't have the verbal skills, they didn't have the mental understanding to know what be here at 8 means. They came at 8:10, 8:15, 8:30. It didn't wrap. Now there is a scientific reason why this happened. Based upon this study, my brothers and sisters, children, the greatest influence on a child's exposure to success is the variety of words that is used in the family home. Poor people don't talk. They watch TV. They gamble. They drink. They smoke. But we don't talk unless it's, boy, get your blankety blank out of my face. When I was poor, child growing up, a child was to be seen, not heard. When my mouth opened, usually somebody was putting their foot in it. Or I was getting a backhand. You don't, a child don't speak to adults. That's how I was raised. Now, you got children now. They run the conversation. They come up, interrupt you when you're talking to adults. I wasn't raised like that. That's Greek to me. So when a child that was raised like me, from real poverty, man, by the time you're 16 or 18, you're dumb as a box of rocks. Why? Because you have heard 4 million less utterance or words in a week than the person from a professional home. So the word count and the vocabulary directly impacts the child's speech development centers. Their social interactions, their cultural significance or understanding, and their academic achievement is all affected by word count. Now, when I was doing this study and I was writing my book and working in this environment, this blew my mind because I can see it every day. I can see it today. Go see and just talk to the average black man, young black man. They're very feminine, and they don't have command of the English language. Yo, what's up, dog? What's up, my boy? Everything is the N-word. Yo, what's up, my N-word? Yo, what's up? That's all they know. So children, again, I say black because I am black. Now, this crosses all racial boundaries. It is economical. It is not racial. Now, I'm in San Antonio, predominantly Hispanic. I can go to the south side of San Antonio right now, and what I'm saying, you see the Hispanic culture. You see the Mexican mafia. And you see these guys tatted up. They got the same problem as somebody from the east side that's from the hood. They've heard fewer words. Therefore, the variety of their vocabulary is very limited. This delays the language abilities. So they grow up with speech impediments. They don't have, and they're labeled and they're put in, into special ed classes because they fall behind in the development of their speech. So you will find a lot of African American Hispanic poor economically, the SES, their social economical status, then you are placed in special ed classes to help develop your language skills and to increase your literacy skills because you haven't heard enough words. You're not slow, but you've been labeled as slow only because you came from an economically disenfranchised environment. Now, one of the things that can help, obviously, is exposure to books, videos, all that stuff, but what if you watch the movie, you know, Friday? What if you watch, nothing against Tyler Perry, but what if you watch Tyler Perry movies? Madea's Christmas, Madea this, Madea that, and that's all you watch. What's your language skill? What is the development of your language? It's going to be very limited. And so children copy how their parents speak. Children copy the words that their parents use. So if a parent isn't interacting with other parents on a very intellectual level, most parents don't. Most poor single parents are in a home with a lot of kids, and they're just interacting with other kids. And so kids hear parents interacting with other kids. And so if the parent isn't interacting with other people of their age and higher, the child sees, again, we're talking about the average single family, female raising a bunch of kids. And, again, my mom, my dad was nowhere around. My mom did everything by herself. She raised all nine of us by herself in a poor single-family environment. Now, the reason why this show and this message is so important is because of we as spiritual people, me as a teacher, this is what I deal with. Some of my clients, I got to be able to connect with them. So I have to be able to connect with them. So if I come on this show, and you guys know I use Greek, I use Hebrew, you know, I'll be dropping, you know, we get deep sometimes on this show. What is the mechanisms through which poverty affects the brain? When we look at this book, one of the things that blew me away is the disparity in the development of the language processing centers of the brain. That blew me away. The decrease in what is called phonological awareness and syntax. People ask me all the time, well, Brother Will, why you got 50 books, man? Why you got a book on morphology? And I break down the 7 stages of language, and I go through syntax. I go through morphology. I go through phonology. And I break all of this down because I was a functional illiterate. Technically, I still am. I need assistance. I never learned, you know, I never watched Hooked on Phonics. I never learned how to pronounce words phonetically. Now, that's been a blessing and a curse. That's one of the results of being raised in an environment of poverty. So this low social economical status, this SES, that it talks about, language development is related to your SES development. Let me say it again. Mothers, this is important. You got any young children at home? Your son, your daughter's social economical status directly ties in to his language development or lack thereof. Now we focus on a lot of things, but if we don't understand the mechanisms through which poverty affects the brain, and how your parenting skills or lack thereof, your individual language development has huge implications on the identity and the SES, the social economic status of your child. Why? Because the neurological, the neural networks is the result of hearing. Faith cometh by hearing and hearing and hearing and hearing by the word of God. So what if you never hear words, you never develop words? The neurolinguistical, it is called inside the brain, it looks like a white mass inside of gray matter. Those are called neural net. In poor people, there's no neural networks. Let me say it again. In children raised in poverty, they don't develop neural nets. Now, neural nets inside of the brain. Again, it shows up when you do when you basically X-ray or do any kind of electronic imaging on the brain. It shows up, and it shows the difference between someone. Again, I have some of the photographs inside of my book, Silence, the Language of Poverty. Now, this works. Now, everybody knows about the technological gap. Go to the hood and ask how many people have internet connection. Now, this blew me away because not only no, I have a Wi-Fi, I have three internet connections, services, three laptops, and a desktop computer. And most of my clients, they don't have internet connection in their home. Are you serious? This is 2015. So, brothers and sisters, there is a huge technological gap. There is a huge wealth gap. This is Tesla. I've talked about this before. The wealth one, yeah, that's a tough one because people don't understand the difference between generational wealth. People just say they see black folks say, man, why don't you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps? I'm with that. Trust me, I've been doing it 50 plus years. But where did I start from? Where did you start from? Now, most of my Caucasian friends, when they got 18, their parents had a trust fund set up for them. They had money waiting for them. Or their family business, they had the option to go into the family business. That was passed down from their father, their father's father, their grandfather's father. Generational wealth. Now, I did a show on generational wealth. It's available here on Blog Talk for free, and generational poverty. When I did that show on generational poverty, I got at least 3-4 calls from people who was crying and said that show changed their life. If you haven't listened, if you come from poverty and you haven't listened to that show, Generational Poverty, Generational Wealth, I would encourage you to listen to that show after this show. Because generational poverty, brothers and sisters, if your mother's mother's mother was on welfare, what do you think you're going to do? If all you've seen in your life, you think that is normal. Generational poverty and generational wealth is so powerful that when I see men and women, I can tell because they have an air of expectancy. They expect wealth. It's not like they hope that the job work out. They go to they expect to get the job. See, we hope to get a job. Generational wealth says, I got the job. Generational poverty says, I hope I get a job. That's a big difference, brothers and sisters, because you bring about what you think about. So the wealthy get wealthier, and the poor get poorer. So the people who have language skills develop better language skills. The people who don't have language skills, the little language that they do got is lost. That's biblical, by the way. To him that has, more shall be given. To him that has not, the little that he does have is taken from him. So God is a God of growth. He rewards growth. Don't believe me? Ask the fig tree. He walked past the fig tree. He was hungry, and the fig tree had no fruit. He cursed the fig tree. It withered, and it died. So I came from poverty. I'm not in poverty no more. I took a lesson from the fig tree. I increased my social economic status, my SES. So let's look at some science real quick before we get into some solutions. Brain behavior and what they call neurocognitive social economic status. Neuro just means science or nerves or neurons. Cognitive means brain. So it means the neurons of your brain react. So, brothers and sisters, when we look at the SES, the social economic status, it defects the neurological centers of the brain when a person lives in, number one, a stressful environment. Do you know that the brain matter of someone who lives in stress is smaller, the brain shrinks? So, women, you can't live in a stressful environment. Your body produces cortisol. It makes you fat around the stomach, around your middle, and your brain decreases. Same thing happens to a female child. It's male too, but not as much, at least as far as the weight gain. The brain shrinks. In other words, the brain cells don't develop. So the neurological cognitive center of the brain, the frontal lobe, usually is inferior. Inside of this study, it talks about the inferior frontal lobe. Now, this is activated during a language task. Anytime you give your child a verbal command, it activates the frontal lobe. Since young children in poverty are not given verbal commands on an intellectual level, the frontal lobe is not activated. Therefore, the frontal lobe, the cognitive, the neurological cognitive part of the brain doesn't develop. So they have a decreased sensitivity to specialized language function. This is all, again, part of the study that I break down and I talk about inside of the book. Silence, the language of poverty. So poverty is associated with the physiological underpinning of language. So language, again, helps you on a psychological and an emotional level. Now, according to the study, the brain releases hormones inside of the hypothalamus and the amygdala that we've talked about many times before. Fear. Fear, again, the hypothalamus and the amygdala are activated in a state of fear. They release adrenaline that produces tunnel vision that causes fight or flight. You run or you fight. Go to the hood. You're a little kid. Say something smart to a little kid. He's going to run or he's going to fight. Why? This is scientifically proven. This study blew my mind. When you are raised in poverty, the amygdala and the hypothalamus, the reptile brain, is 24/7 on high alert. Because why? You're trying to survive. So the survival mechanism. Now, when I was a kid walking the streets of Richmond, you know what I would do? There was a little store called Love's. It was like the only store in the neighborhood. And Love's was in walking distance. And Mr. Love's, you know, on the planet, I still go by that store when I go home just so I can reminisce. I'll just ride by there and look. Sometimes my eyes just swell up with tears. Because I remember going in there and Mr. Love thought that he thought I was stealing because I liked it. I was stealing because, you know what I ate when I was a kid from middle school to about a sophomore in high school? You know what my meals consist of? A six-pack of Snickers. I would eat two in the morning, I would eat two for lunch, and I would eat two at dinner. That's what I eat all day. So during the summer, my weight would drop. You know, the only thing that saved me, brothers and sisters, was a free lunch program. I had two free lunch cards. I would get one free lunch card, and this one kid, he was from Foreshore, which was my real time, and he was a twin. His name was, I remember them, there was Floyd and Lloyd, the gardeners. And they were some big dudes. He didn't really like the food at school. And so he would give me his free lunch card, or, you know, I had to give him a couple of dollars for it. So I had two free lunch cards, so I would eat two breakfasts and two lunches. But when school was out, man, I was in trouble. Because I walked around the streets of Richmond, and I went from, usually I would go from my girlfriend's house, you know, and that's where I would get some food. And, man, then this one lady who you guys heard the story who took me in, her name was Emma Shorts. And if it weren't for Emma Jean, I don't think I'd be here today. Because I started hanging around with this guy named Ken Washington, George McGee, and these other guys that were a little older than me. And we started getting into some stuff. I remember the first time I got shot at, and I heard the bullet whistle past my ear. And the guy had the gun, and I crawled underneath the house. And if he had bent down and looked underneath the house, I wouldn't be here today. That's poverty. So my brain lived in a state of reptile function, meaning that the only thing I thought about was survival. Now, I don't know how I graduated from Lamar High School, Lamar Consolidated. I don't know how I graduated. I never read a book. Only time I went to class was because of Coach James said, boy, if you don't go to school, you ain't playing football. That got my attention. Because football saved my life. Because I could go on the field and I got paid. I got congratulated for hitting somebody. That was like the greatest thing since sliced bread. So you mean to tell me if I hit this dude, I get rewarded? Oh, man. I was a little dude, and I was mowing down dudes because I had anger. Why? Because when school was out, brothers and sisters, I went back home. My dad said, boy, me and Betty don't want you here. You just here because the state told me to take you. So I would come home and sit on the porch of my father's house. And I would hope that he would see me. My father would walk past me inside of love and wouldn't even make eye contact. So I thought maybe he didn't know who I was. Y'all want to talk about poverty? So I would go to Love and I would steal my little six Snickers in the summer. I hated summer. Every other little kid in Richmond was partying in the summertime. I hated summer. It meant nowhere to get no food and no baths. Because in my dad's house, they had a tub. And so when I did the 3-6 months that I did live with him, I would have to take a bath inside of the kitchen. And I would fill this tub up with water, get into this tub, and the women would come in and they would laugh. They would look at me and they would say, ooh, look at him. He's just like his daddy. They'd be looking at my private parts, brothers and sisters. Now, I'm a little 13-year-old kid, just lost my mom. And I thought I was going to a better place. Poverty. What words did my dad say to me? And now, again, my dad did the best he could. I go home and see my dad almost every weekend now. Every time I go, I see him, he's getting frail. My dad's almost 80 years old. He doesn't listen to me. I tell him, Dad, you need to drink water. Yeah, boy, whatever. So, you know, I know he's not going to be here that much longer. Now, he's the only dad I got. So I'm thankful that he did what he could. But what words did I hear from my father growing up? Boy, I don't want you here. Me and Betty, that was my mom, you know, he remarried. Now, she treated me better than my own dad. She recently passed away about 3 or 4 years ago. So to work for her and Imogene and one other lady by the name of Lannis Johnson, she was one of my quote-unquote supposed to be girlfriends. And what was interesting, I wasn't really dating her for her. I was dating her for her mom. Because every time I go over to her house, her mom would feed me. So I'll go to Rosenberg, get food from Lannis' house. Then I'll go to Richmond and I'll get food from Imogene's house. Then I would go and then Betty Sue would make me a bologna sandwich. But if they weren't home, if I couldn't time it right where I could catch them at home, then I would have to go to Love's and steal my 3 Snickers, my 6 Snickers, and that would be my meal for the day. Poverty. And so my brain never developed. The gray matter in my brain, if you want to look at it, I can go into all the science and talk about what they call glucose cortisone. And the result of the stress of poverty, it leads to a decrease in what they call the HC volume, increase in what they call the AG activity of the brain. So now the HC is what they call the hippocampus, and the AG is what they call the amygdala. Those two cannot be activated. If they activate, they produce what is called adrenochrome inside of the body. Adrenochrome is a dysregulation of the stress hormone. It disconnects the neocortex from the paleocortex and it activates the reptile brain. You want to know why I was a bad little kid? From a scientific perspective, I was a reptilian, meaning that I was focused on survival. I was focused on procreation and survival. That was it. That's what reptiles do. You see a dog, you see any reptile, all they're interested in what or how I'm going to eat. It's the survival of the fittest. So that's what I did at 13. So I didn't develop no language. My language skills was to mean mug you. And if you didn't mean mug me back, then that means I could take you. And when we look at the psychology of this, then it gets me to understand, and I can relate. That's why, like you guys heard the story before, when I worked in the prison, I had no problem with the inmates. White, black, or Hispanic. You all know there's no Asians in prison. Don't believe me? Go to any prison and look for any Asians. You won't find any there. Now, you may want to ask yourself why. Why are there no Asians in prison? Language. Asians got language. Another study for another time. Children who hear more words and who know more words are more successful, scientifically proven. They do better in school. They have better social skills. They have better interaction skills. They are betterly cultural skills. They connect. They got deeper roots, better roots in their culture. They got better family skills. They know how to interact with other people. And more importantly, they understand economics. Scientifically proven. Children whose families are on welfare, again, 100 words per hour. Working class children, 1,200 words per hour. Children from professional homes, 2,100 words per hour. Based upon a study by a gentleman by the name of Rosenberg back in 2013. So this gap is huge, as you can see. So you mean to tell me somebody with 600 words is how they're going to compete with somebody who has 2,100 words? They can't. So if a child is raised in the hood, their parents don't talk. They just say, boy, get out of here. Shut up. Sit down. Go to your room. That's what I heard. That was my vocabulary. Sit down. Shut up. Get out of here. That's what folks talk to their children. Don't believe me? Go to the hood. Any hood, anywhere, usually on the east side of any city in America. Go to East St. Louis. It'll blow your cookies. So children grow up, and guess what? There is an invisible ceiling in the vocabulary. They don't have one. So while the parent's vocabulary can negatively influence the child, the lack of vocabulary is worse. The study suggests that it is better to say negative things to your children than it is not to say nothing at all. That's mind-blowing to me. It is better to teach your child negative words, to curse them, call them MFs and little B's and holes, than it is just to do what happened to me. Boy, get out. We don't want you here. So I walked the streets of Richmond. You know what it's like to be 13 walking the streets? And, you know, I remember Captain Brown, you guys heard the story. He used to pick me up sometime and just take me over to Imogene's house. Because he'd see me walking around, he knew I was getting ready to get into some trouble. I was looking for a bike to steal. Don't let me walk past your garage door and it was open. That was a wrap. 13. That's when I started. My mom died. Sent me to my dad's house. That was a wrap. So once you understand, brothers and sisters, the environmental risk that comes from not speaking and sitting down and spending time with your children and sharing your vocabulary skills with your children, that you have just cursed your child for life, because they are now what they call SES, fetal programming, is gone. So they don't have the social economical status or skills because you did not pass that down. How? Through talking. So what is your parenting style, mother? What is your parenting style, brother? So my children, you know what I did to my children? Now, my daughters, I think Sade is listening to the show right now. I could bring Sade on the show. You know what Sade will tell you right now? All five of my children. Okay, Dad, yeah, we know. Please stop talking. All of my children, talk to them. My oldest daughter, Sade, trying not to get emotional. My oldest daughter overcame all kind of adversity to graduate top of her class at the University of North Texas. My son's still struggling because my son was like me. I saw me and my son, so I tried to beat him out of him. I hated myself so much, and I took it out of my son. I was young, dumb, and stupid. So last night, when I was out with my children, every time I see my son, I apologize to him and I hug him, and I talk to him. I got to rebuild the gap. My daughters are good because they were girls. They didn't get the wrath. My youngest son, he came around when I finally woke up. But my oldest son, yeah, he's still struggling. But I'm still here. And I got tools now. I got a vocabulary. My middle daughter graduated, again, top of the class, fashion. Now she has a job. They paid to move up there. They brought her a car. They put her in her own apartment. She's making more money right now, fresh out of college, than I've ever made. Why? I talked to her. Now, they didn't like it. Please shut up. We're tired of hearing your stories. My daughter, I can bring on right now. She can tell you all my stories better than I can. She heard them so many times. Yeah, Dad, we know. Yeah, you was abused when you was a child. Sister Shields ripped you, you know, hit you in the back with a metal pipe. Yeah, you went to Richmond. Your dad didn't love you. Blah blah blah. Get over it. They don't understand. But I get joy, brothers and sisters, seeing my children because they're successful now. They don't understand. But when they get older, guess who you think they're gonna be calling? They'll call me. They'll thank me. They'll get it now. But they'll get it when they, my oldest daughter, she just had a daughter. Little Sienna is running around, and Sade is starting to, she's starting to see the big picture now. She'll text me sometime. She'll say, Dad, I love you. Thank you, Dad. Appreciate you. Because now she has a daughter. She see how hard it is. She understands the biological mechanisms that is required to develop a child is based upon language. And so we need, as a group of people, if anyone is listening to this show that's in any kind of a, quote-unquote, financial situation, don't make it detrimental to the child by your word usage around the child, in front of the child. If you drink, don't get drunk and come home and start talking cray-cray in front of your child. You're in a bad relationship? Don't be out there trying to box your husband or your wife in front of your child. The child not only hears, but they pick up what you do. It is hugely important that we understand that word usage is the single strongest detrimental or the single strongest advantage that you can give your child. A child with a vocabulary is powerful. Most importantly, the relationship between poverty and the vocabulary growth or communication skills is the ability to use actually less complicated syntax or phonics or phonology, meaning just speaking to your children in simple, everyday language. Low language complexity, in according to the study, helped to develop the vocabulary growth of the child more than trying to wax eloquently using Greek and Hebrew. Some people get a copy, they get my books, and they are disappointed because all of my books are written on the eighth grade reading level on purpose. And so I get these Reverend Dr. Bishops who get my book, and they're like, my audience is previously incarcerated individuals. My audience is poor folks. My audience is me, people who are just like me. That's my audience. Why? I'm trying to give them vocabulary skills. That's why I got 50 books. That's why I do a show every day. So hopefully people are listening to this show, and they are picking up on the terms and the definitions and the phrases. Why do you think I go and I teach didactically? Why do I play the definitions of the terms and the words that I use? Why do I break down words in the Hebrew and the Greek? Why do I give you the words six, four, five, six levels deep? I know that somebody just got out of prison listening to my show. They don't have that vocabulary, and they need it. So my brothers and sisters, let's end on a positive note. Let's end on a good note. How do you, let's say you were raised like me. Not your fault. Did I sign up for this? Absolutely not. At least I don't remember. So how do you like improve, if we want to use that term? How do you improve your communication skills? So you're a poor communicator, or you're a good communicator, but you want to be a better communicator. You know, brothers and sisters, that your vocabulary determines your wealth. People who have, now you may have, and I'll never forget the story of Lester Hayes. Now, I know you young whippersnappers don't remember Lester Hayes. He used to be a cornerback for Oakland Raiders. He graduated from Texas A&M, College Station, Texas. Could not read or write. He signed an X on his $3 million check when he went to the NFL. He was one of the best cornerbacks ever to play the game. I think he's either dead or, last time I heard, I know he was penniless. He was broke. Didn't have two nickels to rub together. Lester Hayes. Why? No communication skills. Could not read. He could not write. Could not communicate. So he had to depend upon somebody. You mean to tell me one of the top players in the NFL and you signed your name with an X? Like the slaves used to be. Slaves. Now, this was, again, I was a young kid in high school. Well, I was a cornerback. I was a defensive back. He was the best defense. I wanted to be like Lester Hayes. He couldn't read or write. Neither could I. I graduated from high school. I couldn't read or write. Not on the scale, I could copy yours, but I couldn't articulate words unless I heard it first. Functional illiterate. So what did I set out to do? To become illiterate. To improve. That's why I got 50 books, working on number 51 today, right after the show. The key, my brothers and sisters, to understanding communication is the first thing that I did is I brought this was way, way back in the day when cassette tapes was out, so I'm telling my age. And there was a book called Vocabulary Builder. And so I would listen anytime I took a trip, anytime I had opportunity, I would play these words. Not only did they do, pronounce the word, they would give you the definition, and then they would tell you to say the word and read the definition. And I would just play it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Communication. Communication is the process of transferring linguistical signals between a sender and a receiver through various means or methods. Communication. Everybody listening to the show, no matter how great your communication skills are, you can improve them. To the degree that you improve your communication skills is the degree that you increase your wealth. Now, brothers and sisters, let me make sure y'all understand the power of what I just said. So now, I came from Podunk, Texas, right? Now, let me tell you the power of communication skills. So every house I've ever brought, and you guys know I bought quite a few of them, not one of them did I buy from the traditional method. All of them I brought with, as my daughter Sade used to tell me, Dad, you got a mouthpiece. I said, Sade, what does that mean? She said, come on, Dad, you're a smooth talker. So I'm like, okay, what can I do with that? So I started studying to show myself approved, rightly dividing the word of truth. And so I took my gift of being a smooth talker, and I added words to it. And then I understand, okay, I went, when I was in L.A., I was based in San Diego, I would go to L.A. on the weekends. I went to Wade Cook. You guys can Google him. I think he's in prison right now. But he was one of my gurus, Wade Cook. Another one of my gurus, Tom Boo. They made a movie off that fool with Marky Mark and I think The Rock. He was another real estate guru. Wasn't even from this country. So long story short, what did I do? I increased my linguistical skills in the areas that I wanted to be proficient in. Number one, real estate. I wanted to become a real estate guru. Now, I got off the wagon before I actually got to the point where I should have, but I still got those skills. The house that I'm living in right now, how did I get into this house? With no money, with no credit, no traditional mortgage, my communication skills. I understood, I learned the language of real estate. I became proficient in the language of real estate because the language of poverty is silence. So people meet me and they say, brother, man, you can talk a lot. This show, I'm doing this show, what, hour and a half nonstop. My wife looks at me and she's like, I don't know how in the world you do all these shows. You talk all day. Because right before the show, what was I doing? I was on a session. Right after this show, I got another session with another client. What I'm going to do all day today, I'm going to talk. Why? That's how I make a living. Why? That was my flaw growing up. So I took my strength, my flaw, and I made it my strength. So I didn't have no command of the English language. I do now. I know a little Greek and a little Hebrew, too, to mix it up a little bit. So I became proficient in the language of real estate. Then I realized that the people who are wealthy, they are in the areas of residual income. So I said, residual income. So I make it one time, and I get paid on it the rest of my life. Sign me up. How do I do that? So I became proficient in residual income, the language of the wealthy. What does Mark Cuban do? What does Bill Gates do? What does Warren Buffett do? You think Warren Buffett punches the 9 to 5? Warren Buffett buys stocks and resells them. He made all his money off the stock market. Not in a bunch of other areas now, too. What about Sam Walton before he kicked the bucket and now his family? None of these guys traded dollars for hours. They controlled space. They controlled their space. They were masters of their craft with language. Language, my brothers and sisters, to increase your language skills, you got to understand the language of your space. If you are in real estate, you got to know all of the buzzwords. When I say escrow, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When I say loan to value, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When I say MMP, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When I say, property taxes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If I go into, now I became, after real estate, because, again, I can buy a house, I can put you in it, and you pay me rent for the rest of your life. I like that. I went into insurance, became a licensed insurance agent. Why? I sell you an insurance policy once, and you pay me a premium for the rest of your life. I like that. So I understand the law of large numbers. I understand the loan to value. I understand that you got to have an insurable interest. Why? That's the language of insurance. Then I went into self-publishing. Why? I control the strings. Now, I could have went to the traditional publishing market, get me an agent, submit my book to a big publishing house, hope and pray that they grant me. I don't think so. Find a system or create your own. So I self-published all 50 of my books. Why? Every book, I woke up this morning, and guess what? A couple of dollars in my PayPal account. Why? I sold a book that I wrote 20 years ago. So I'm still getting paid on the book, The Ultimate Secret to Being Rich. I wrote it 20 years ago. Why? The language of poverty is silence. The language of the wealthy is communication. It is the command of your space. Now, you guys don't go out just one, but like when I first started, I was just listening to random words. What did that do? That gave me words. Now, you know that words create worlds. So I had a bunch of random words, so I had a random world. So my low language complexity was not purpose-based. So what I recommend is that you do what I did. Regardless of how much money you're making, there is somebody that may need to know, how do I increase my language density? How do I maximize the opportunities of my mental acronym? How do I use less or how do I use more language diversity? How do I increase my SES? How do I increase that? How do I increase my status? How do I do that? The way that you do that, my brothers and sisters, is through activating the development of the brain's regions associated with language reception and expression. Let me say that again. Your wealth is directly tied to the health of your language, or the development of the frontal lobe, the part of the brain that controls language development. So language, you must understand that you must increase the development of the brain's regions, the part of the brain, the frontal lobe, that is associated with language receptors, reception, and expression. Now, the way that is done through hearing, if not just hearing anything, it must be purpose-based. Don't believe me? Sit your child down and start speaking Greek to them. Watch how they look at you with this very strange look on your face, on their face. Do you know, brothers and sisters, that, again, for everybody who listened to my show, The Science and Metaphysics of Water Baptism, do you know that different language affects water differently, different structure of the water? That blew my cookies. Certain languages are better than other languages. So water responds to Paleo-Hebrew better than it responds to English. So there are certain what they call reptilian people that are what they call sociopaths. Now, the sociopathic behavior is the result of neurologically hardwiring the brain of the reptile. Now, I saved this part for the last. It's the most controversy. It's the last chapter of my book. Every person that I've met in prison, I talked about the lack of purpose, right? You know what the next common denominator is for people? Now, I'm talking about a supermax. I'm not talking about no farm system or no medium security system where a guy, you know, you got caught like me selling Snickers or, you know, bicycles, and you get a slap on the wrist and, you know, no. I'm talking about guys who killed 30 people, chopped their bodies up, and put them in the refrigerator. I'm talking about people who got people buried in their backyard and sleeping on top of them. Sociopaths. People who do bad things for a living and sleep like babies. You know what they all have in common? No frontal lobe activity. No, the linguistical part, the language structure of their brain never developed. Therefore, the reptile brain, they are neurologically hardwired for a bad activity. Show me a criminal, I'll show you the reptile brain activated. How is the reptile brain activated? According to science, there is what they call the middle frontal gyrus, G-Y-R-U-S. It's called the MFG. This is the area associated with rules and learning, learning of rules. So you run, women, you run into a park lot late at night by yourself. You're just coming from the club, and you run into this guy. He's looking at you. You're looking at him, and you get this vibe like, I should not be here. But you're like, oh, no, you know, it's okay. I don't know, he's not going to mess with me. It's, you know, that's too many cars. But you got a sixth sense. What you sensing is them demons. You sensing that reptile that he's neurologically wired to harm you. He can't even help himself. He don't even know why. Most of the knuckleheads I talked to in prison, they told me, I said, man, why'd you kill them all? I don't know, Raj. I don't know, man. I just killed them because they were there. They can't even express why. Why? The rules part of their brain, the part of the ability to learn new rules and previously learned rules, is located in the region of the PFC. It is the frontal part. It is called the middle frontal gyrus of the brain. That part of the brain is not activated unless it is developed through language. So you grow up in a poor home and you don't hear no words, your frontal lobe, your mental frontal gyrus, your MFG, that's associated, that gives you the ability to not only learn rules but follow them. So I had a problem with rules. I had a big problem with authority. You know what saved my life? Listening to the Word of God on tape, over and over. I don't know why, I just did it. God told me, put your word in your voice. So I wrote a whole book called Faith Talk. I wrote that book, man, in the 90s. You know what that book consisted of? Me reading scriptures. And so every night, I didn't know why, I was listening. I would go to bed, and I was praying because I was cheating on my wife. I was lying in the bed, and I didn't want to do it, but I was like programmed. I didn't understand. I was driven. And people would tell me, man, just stop. I can't stop, man. I don't know why. I was neurologically hardwired into my reptile brain, scientifically proven. So I had to rewire. So I wrote a book called Neurological or Neurotheology, How to Hardwire the Brain to God. You got a bad kid? Let that fool listen to some scriptures. See how his behavior changed quick. Brothers and sisters, this is so powerful. From a biological, did I read it in the scriptures today? Not a scripture. This is basic biology. I learned this at the police academy. I learned this in the corrections academy. And I learned that Marines, the thing that make good devil dogs, all of the guys that are bushmasters, all of the guys that were what we call 0311s, which they almost was, the infantry, all of them knuckleheads are from the backwoods of Kentucky, from low South Texas, where I was from Idaho, from Wyoming, from all of these economically disenfranchised areas. Why? Those individuals are already neurologically hardwired to fight or run. They're automatically programmed. So the Marine Corps, they take them knuckleheads in, they just, you know, break them down, rebuild them in their image. They make good soldiers, put them out there on the front line, they will kill anything that moves. How do I know? I used to be one. It ain't something I read of a book. I wanted to hurt people bad. Marines, we don't like to just hurt people. We want to dismember you. We used to go to clubs just looking for people to fight. And after I stopped one day, and I asked myself, why do I want to hurt people? That's not me. I wasn't even a bushmaster. But every Marine goes through infantry school. What they taught me, man, in infantry school was dangerous. It messed up my psychology. I was already messed up. Why? No frontal lobe activity. Silence the language of poverty. So you go to the hood. I love when people do those, they go to the hood and do those studies. I don't understand why they're so violent. Really? I understand why they're violent. If you were raised in a cage and nobody talked to you, they just throw you a bone every once in a while, you'd be violent too. So it's very important, brothers and sisters, that with all your spirituality, don't get your head so high up in the cloud that you ain't got no biology and science to go with your spirituality. Yeah, because I don't care if you're a Reverend Dr. Bishop, if you end up on the wrong side of town at the wrong time, somebody whose MFG has been neurologically activated because they had no language development, there was no home literacy environment, there was no influential language development, there was no early, we're talking about from the age of 0 to 3, the study says by the time the child is 3, they've already heard 30 million words less. 30 million. So by the time that the child is 6, they've heard 60 million less words. So, you know, I don't know if y'all really understand the depth of the problem. So when I address these people, these are the issues that's in the back of my brain, and I understand why the client that I'm talking to is not connecting. Now, I used to get paid to go into these individuals' homes with a cell phone and car keys. You ever go into a known murderer's house. You in his playground now. They feel a little bit more cocky and more arrogant because they're not in the cell. They're not in the halfway house. You on their turf. You ever know what it feels like to go to a known Mexican mafia leader? I walked into a house, they was having a meeting, 15. And I'm what they call a spear chunker, African-American. So I walk into the house and I say, yo, what's up, F.A.? You lost, homie? No, man, I ain't lost. Are you lost? So I have to have the language. I have to have the language skills. I have to have the ability to not develop tunnel vision. How is that done? So you walk into an environment. You are totally outnumbered from a reptilian perspective. That means that they are oscillating in a low vibration. You are in a high vibration. You got to have, okay, first of all, I didn't number these. There's three things. Number one, you got to hear, you got to increase your, what I call your motivated ability subject. There must be a language. Number two, you got to have courage to say what you think. Be confident. When you learn it, say it. That's what I did. So I was trained. They taught me. They trained me very well. The FBI trained us really, really well. So you're going into somebody's house. So you work in a, I work in a supermax prison. You in a cell with 90 killers. 90. There's 30 on each tier. I watched a man get picked up, throw off the top tier. His name was Captain Baca. That fool was back at work in a week, hobbling around, broke arm, broke collarbone, broke leg, went right back to the cell where them fools threw him off, looked him in the eye and said that I'm back. Number one, again, to be able to over and understand what I am telling you today is that silence is the language of poverty. Therefore, your ability to communicate disengages the neurological programming of the reptile. Notice what the Helios Biblia said. The Bible says, faith cometh by hearing. You know what the definition of what faith is? Faith is the substance of things hoped for. So I went into this environment with 15 Mexican mafia, and my hope was I was coming out alive. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I had evidence that nobody could see. What was my evidence? I was coming out alive. You know, every day that I went to work in that supermax prison in Santa Fe, I knew I was coming home to see my wife and kids. Why? I made up in my mind before I left that day I was coming home. I didn't know how, but I know I was. And when I looked them in the eye, I made sure that they understood that I was coming home, and they were standing in that box. The ability to communicate the words that you're taught. So I'm living in a big, nice house right now because I took classes. I paid anywhere from $600 to $800 on weekend classes to learn the language of real estate. So when I talked to the owner of the house, I displayed that language with confidence, number two. So you learn something and you ain't got no confidence. That means you didn't learn it. Confidence, my brothers and sisters, being confident in knowing that you can make contributions through conversation is what the Bible is all about. Yahushua says, I am going to use the foolishness of preaching. What is preaching? Can somebody please break that down for me? Preaching is what I'm doing right now. Preaching is opening and closing your mouth. Preaching, the definition of what preaching means, making an utterance. You rewire DNA when you make an utterance, if you make the right utterance. I understand that. Put me in any environment, anywhere, I'm good. Take me to the ghetto, I'm cool. Take me to the White House, I can hang out with Barack Obama right now. We can break bread. Why? I understand the power of language. Anything that you can buy with language, I mean with money, I can buy with language. So I don't have a money problem. When I need money, I talk. That's how I make money. How do you make money, brother? How you make money, sister? Language is more powerful than money. Money runs out. Language don't. I can talk all day, as y'all can see. Number three, and we ended with this. Again, how do you overcome everything that we talk about, okay? Silence is the language of poverty. Okay, you know somebody who from a poverty environment, what do you tell them? You tell them, okay, get words that's in your sphere. What is that? Purpose. What's your purpose? Oh, you don't know. Okay, we need to talk. Or what have you been through? Or where are you at? So you work at McDonald's. You need to master the language of McDonald's. Man, I don't want to work at no McDonald's, man. I'm just here passing through. Hey, while you there, you need to go to the language school of McDonald's. Wherever you are right now, master your space. When you master your space, you outgrow it. You, by law, have to be promoted. I tell people this all the time, man. Don't try to change. Don't try to leave where you are. Outgrow it. You're in a bad relationship, don't leave your husband or your wife. They're going to leave you. Why? Outgrow them. They either change and grow with you, or they say, you know what, honey, this is not working. We're just different, you know. We're going different ways. Absolutely. As-salamu alaykum. God bless you. You're in a job. You don't like your job. Outgrow your job. They have to promote it. Become so efficient in your space that you master your space with linguistics. When you do that, people are going to notice you. You're going to shine. Why? Your gifts make room for you and take you before kings, which is number three. Engage your audience. Number one, master the language. Number two, have the courage to speak the language. Number three, engage your audience with your language. That's what I'm doing right now. So I'm a didactic discourse teacher. I've mastered my language. I'm perfecting it every day. Every day I'm doing more and more research to continue because my space is big. I got wealth, health, and wisdom. So really I got three purposes in one. That's why my growth is taking longer. What if I just would have mastered one? I'd be a multimillionaire already. But since I got three purposes, it takes a little longer because I got to develop all three. So y'all looking at me and you say, man, Brother Will, you've been doing this for 20 years and you're still struggling, homie? Yeah. Because once I do blow, it's going to blow. See, I've been priming the pump. It's like a snowball. The snowball is just starting to roll downhill, brothers. It's just starting to roll downhill, sister. Once that snowball starts rolling, all of this, my 50 books, my 300 videos, my 1,500 audio shows, they're going to carry me. From now until Yahushua comes back. Oh, yeah, I'm not a little podunk that don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for a while. I got a plan, and I'm working my plan. What's your plan? Make sure, my brothers and sisters, that you are not silent. It doesn't matter where you start. What matters where you finish. A good friend of mine told me, Brother Will, don't look at the scoreboard. I'm here to tell somebody, I'm going to pass this on to somebody. Somebody needs to hear that. You've been doing something. You've been working hard, and you've been struggling, and it doesn't seem like what you're doing is working. Don't look at the scoreboard. Keep your eyes on the game. You ever seen a football player? You can't be looking at the scoreboard and also trying to tackle at the same time. Keep your mind in the game, brother. Keep your mind in the game. Increase your vocabulary skills. Open and understand your space. If you want to be a dancer, master the words, the language, the techniques of everything to do with dance. Become the most proficient dancer on the planet. When you do that, your gift will make room for you. And so when you get an opportunity, be bold. Be courageous. Don't walk up there and say, well, I want to present to you today. Hell no. You've been working all your life for this opportunity. When you get that opportunity, be bold. Be courageous. Be of courage. Contribute through your conversation. Engage your audience. Say something that when you leave, they remember you. When people hear my show, they may not like what I say, but they remember me. Then, man, that fool calls himself Master Teacher 33. That dude, man, he look how strong. But, you know, some of that stuff he says makes sense. You know how many people tell me, man, I really don't like you, but, I'm still listening. Yeah, I know why you're listening. Because I've taken the time, my brothers and sisters, to underopen and say that the devil meant something for evil. I was raised in an evil environment, but nobody talked to me. All I did was sit on the porch, wait for my dad to come home to hear him walk past me, go in, open the door, slam the door, and lock it. I remember one time I broke the window and I climbed in. He came in the house and said, Negro, he used other words, what the hell are you doing here? How'd you get here? Before I could even get the words out of my mouth, his fist was in my mouth. I got beat so bad that day, I could barely walk. This is my biological father. So 13, yeah, I had some issues. But look where I'm at today. So I go home. I probably go home next weekend. I'm going to see my father. Say, Dad, I love you. Yeah, boy. That's all he said. I give him a hug. He says, his body gets stiff. Why? His dad used to tie him to a tree and whoop him with a wet rope. So I forgive my dad. Saying what was done to him, he just did to me. But with my children, I stopped the curse. I was still figuring it out with my first two. But my last three, oh yeah, they good. Why? You know what I did with them all last night and my daughter, we went out to eat, you know what we did all night? Talked. Before, on the way over there, we talked. When we got there, took them out the Outback Steak, we ate some steaks, and while we was there, what we did? We talked. On the way home, what we do? Talk. When I went over there to my ex-house, my ex-one jumped in the bed. You know what me and my children did? We talked. You know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to call my daughter, pick up from school. I'm going to go over there. You know what we're going to do? We're going to talk. The devil is a liar. The buck stops here. Silence is the language of poverty. Make sure you communicate the word of God and the word of your space to everybody you come in contact with. The three things, again, are, number one, make sure you master your language. Find the words for your space. If you're an architect, every word to deal with architecture, you need to know it. You're a plumber. You're an electrician. Master your language, not mine, yours. Be bold, be courageous, speak your language with power, with boldness, and with confidence. Practice it by engaging everybody you see. Engage people with your language. Don't learn it and put it on the shelf. That's why I do a show every day. I'm sharpening my saw. Sharpen yours. My brothers and my sisters, I am Dr. Will Rogers, a.k.a. Master Teacher 33. God bless you. His name is Yahuwah. May his son bless you. His name is Yahushua. May the Ruach, the set apart one, continue to lead you and guide you in all truth. And as always, my brother, as always, my sister, I will see you in eternity. God bless you.
I spoke to Jesus. He gonna lead us through these enemies. He told me what I need is right up in me. So ain't no way that none of these people can offend me. And I can hang out with some people that's pretending. I spoke to Jesus, he gon' lead us through these enemies. He told me what I need is right up in me. So ain't no way that none of these people can offend me. And I can't hang out with some people that's pretending. I'm trying to tell you, this ain't nothing you should worry about. If you so negative with thoughts, then you should blur it out. Why take a sedative when you can take your courage out? Why take a sedative when you can take your courage out? Let's make them feel it, we ain't even gotta curse it all. Like getting digits, you ain't even have to flirt it all. I got these dividends, that dividends can't buy it all. I got these dividends, that dividends can't buy it all. I'm about to shift again, no blended in, no not at all. And all my frenemies and enemies and buy them all. Cause this is skipping, it's and misery is about to fall. They got monopolies and properties inside a store. Don't trace that money out there properly, it's not for y'all. And ain't it funny cause we'll grind but we don't fight at all. I know we think it but we keep it all inside us all. I know we think it but we keep it all inside us all. I spoke to Jesus, he gon' lead us through these enemies.